This is Mishmash, a weekly conversation where we try to unjumble an important and sometimes under the radar statewide story that affects you. I'm Shayna Roth. Do you know for sure if your state lawmaker has the education background they say they do? I mean, do you really know? The Detroit Free Press decided to find out for sure with a special project that just came out, and not everyone was as honest as you'd hope. Here with me to break it all down is a familiar voice that we actually haven't heard from in a while, Emily Lawler, state politics and government editor for the Free Press. Emily, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So the Freep set out on a quest to verify the touted education credentials of all 148 state lawmakers. First of all, why was this such a vital mission?
Yeah, so, you know, we saw, I think a lot of journalists looked at the George Santos revelations after he was already in Congress and were distressed to find that he had lied about, among other things in his background, his educational credentials. And so our education reporter, Lily Altavina, had come to me and said, hey, we should really figure out if anyone's doing this in Michigan. And I sort of resisted because that sounded like a giant, giant undertaking. And it was. But, you know, we also saw an example closer to home. The Lansing State Journal uncovered that the East Lansing principal had actually, you know, had an issue with his academic credential as well. And I thought, you know, maybe this is more common than I realize.
You ended up finding two state lawmakers that do not have the right academic information on their online biographies. Tell us about them.
One was Rep. Gina Johnson, who claimed to have a bachelor's and a master's. And when we reached out to the institution, they could only verify the bachelor's. She didn't have a master's. And then one is Rep. John Roth, who had an associate's degree that he had claimed. And when we reached out to the college, they were unable to verify. They said he had attended but not received that degree.
Are Representative Roth, by the way, no relation, and Rep. Johnson going to do anything about this mistake or whatever that we're calling this incorrectness on their websites?
Yeah, Representative Johnson, her office said that a former staffer had made a mistake of some sort, and they're moving to fix the biography that she displays on the GOP website. And worth noting that she didn't make that claim anywhere else. So it was just in the information that was available about all state legislators that we saw that. John Roth was pretty surprised to learn that there was a problem with his credentials. So he told me he spent an hour and a half at the college trying to sort all of this out earlier this week. And I think he's going to make an attempt to verify that and figure out what went wrong there, because he was definitely under the impression that he had a degree. And it seems like something might have gone wrong with transfer credits or a course that didn't record. So he's working with the college and is hoping to come to a resolution.
And then there were also some lawmakers whose credentials seemed to fall in a weird sort of gray area when you tried to confirm their credentials. Tell us about those.
I think the biggest gray area for us was the lawmaker who, Rep. Borton, who had claimed a degree from Liberty University, or he said he studied there. But, you know, he went through this program called the Liberty Home Bible Institute, which is sort of an offshoot or was an offshoot of the university. The university didn't have records of him attending the university and didn't have records from that program anymore. But it looked like sort of a home correspondence course program that wasn't, you know, what you might think of as a traditional academic four-credit degree. So, you know, that was kind of a little bit of a gray area for us. And some representatives made that more clear. So, for example, Rep. Alexander had said that he had certificates of completion from Hillsdale College. And, you know, he was pretty clear that he didn't claim a degree from Hillsdale College or to have studied at Hillsdale College, but he wanted people to know that he had done their, you know, sort of free online course. Again, not like a four-credit traditional academic background, but certainly, like, you know, he wanted people to know that he had learned about these subjects.
And it looks like really all of the lawmakers with kind of questionable statements about their education were Republicans. What, if anything, do you make of that?
Yeah, you know, not much. I guess statistically, I expected to find more discrepancies in the House just because there are so many House lawmakers. I mean, there's 110 as compared to 38 in the Senate. And actually, the Senate was a little bit easier to verify in some respects. But, you know, we ended up reaching out to more than 70 academic institutions. And we ran into a few problems, but a lot of cooperation too. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess I view it as more of a coincidence than anything else that, you know, all of the sort of examples that we cited ended up within the House Republican caucus. But it's not like we were picking and choosing. Like, we absolutely would have used examples in other caucuses if we found them in other caucuses, but just so happened that, you know, they were sort of concentrated in the House Republicans caucus.
New from the Embedded podcast, female athletes have always needed grit and talent, but for decades, they've also needed a certificate.
There was chit chat about, is that really a woman?
And even now, they're still being checked and questioned. Their story is the newest series from CBC and NPR's Embedded. It's called Tested. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Verifying 148 people's resumes sounds like a really heavy lift. Can you give us some behind-the-scenes insight into how you and your team went about doing this?
Yeah, it was a heavy lift. Certainly, it was difficult to, you know, I guess what we did or where our starting point was putting everything in a spreadsheet. So we looked through all of the biographies that the House and Senate lawmakers put on our state websites and sort of, you know, pulled from there what institutions and what degrees. There were some instances where we had to go a little bit deeper than that. For instance, there was one representative who said that she had received an undergraduate degree from a college in New York, and we had to like go into her LinkedIn to figure out which college we should talk to and make sure we could verify that. So, you know, there was a little bit of sleuthing on that end, and then it was reaching out to colleges, and colleges were kind of across the board. Some of them, like, shout out to people like Oakland University, Wayne State University, who just immediately recognized the importance and did everything they could to go through our list. There are multiple representatives and senators at both of those institutions. But, you know, other universities were more combative or tried to hide behind FERPA, which doesn't apply to this, doesn't apply to verifying a degree or not. Or tried to funnel us to the National Student Clearinghouse, which is sort of this national database that employers can use. But when we tried to use it, we found out that members of the press and members of the public are barred from using it. We didn't have that as an option. So it was kind of hard to explain a lot of that to the universities and say, hey, like, you're sending us to this thing that you send everyone to, but we can't use it. And like, for that matter, a general citizen wondering if their lawmaker's degree is valid can't use it.
Does the Free Press have any plans to expand this project, maybe to more localized lawmakers or to the governor's office or federal congresspeople, anything like that?
You know, we haven't really talked through that. So, you know, it took us a few months really to get through 148 state lawmakers. But I do think that it's important. I think that, you know, it's a part of everyone's biography that you would assume would be easily verified and was a lot harder once we kind of got into the weeds of doing that. So, you know, I hope that this project sort of shows people, A, that we are on guard, that we're really making an attempt to hold public officials accountable and make sure that they're doing what they say they're doing and have the experience they say they have. But also that, you know, some of these claims are easier to obscure than you'd think. You know, you sort of have this vision of like, of course no one would say that they went to college if they didn't go to college, and that would be like easily verifiable. But honestly, it's harder than that. And also, you know, there's more nuance, as we found, to some of these claims than others.
I want to shift gears and talk about what you're calling Governor Gretchen Whitmer's mini State of the State address. Whitmer delivered the speech on Wednesday at the Lansing Shuffle, which is a food hall near the state capitol. Emily, why did Whitmer decide to give a big speech?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because usually we're used to the State of the State at the beginning of the year. The governor lays out a bunch of priorities. The lawmakers react to all those priorities, and then we see if they get done over the next year. Well, This legislature, the first Democratic trifecta in, I think, 40 years, from January through March, had like the busiest session. They just sort of like ticked through the to-do list and at a pace that I think people weren't necessarily expecting. They got consensus, like those are really, really small and tight majorities, and they managed to get a lot of things over the hump that I think people thought would take a lot longer or take more convincing. And they set such an aggressive pace that my read here is that, you know, they did got through the budget after, you know, sort of March through May, June, got through the budget. And then they traditionally go spend some time in their districts over the summer. So they're back in Lansing now. And Governor Whitmer sort of held this update. And, you know, my impression is sort of that the state of the state set the agenda, and so much had been accomplished that they sort of had to reset the agenda going into the fall. So, yeah, the governor laid out some priorities. One of them is paid leave. One of them is expanding abortion access and sort of repealing some of the more restrictive laws that have passed over the years. And, you know, pieces like that are huge, huge lifts. It's the fall agenda, and we'll see. It seems to me, it seems like these are some really big asks that might be a little bit fraught and might take some time, but I would have told you that in January too. And like I say, this legislature has just sort of been trucking through that to-do list.
Talk us through some of those other big points that might be a little bit more difficult to get past the finish line.
I mean, I think paid leave in particular is probably going to face some resistance from the business community. I think that, you know, Republicans have already raised questions about how we pay for that and if that's a business-friendly policy in a time when we're trying to attract businesses and, side note, people to Michigan. So I think that that could face some back and forth, especially on some of the details.
So Democrats have been enjoying their trifecta of control for a little over half a year now. You mentioned that they've gotten a lot done, but are these the types of things that they had said they would do way back when they were campaigning? Are they really delivering on those promises that they had said that they would?
To a large extent, yes. I mean, I look at things like the expansion of the Elliott Larson Civil Rights Act. That's something that's been on the Democratic wish list for years. I look at things like the earned income tax credit expansion and same, right? Democrats have literally been wanting to relook at that and campaigning on relooking at that since it was changed in 2011. So, you know, I look at those sort of longstanding priorities, obviously repealing the right to work law, big one, again, since 2012, Democrats have wanted that. So yeah, I do think that to-do list was largely aligned. One thing that I don't think anyone necessarily anticipated is just like the amount of money that Democrats would have to spend. You know, I think that this budget probably looked different than it would have certainly 5 years ago, just because there's a big influx of federal money. The state revenues came in higher than expected. And the Democrats have been able to do some things that they might not have been saying on the campaign trail, but that ended up being priorities once they got in office. I think of things like, you know, some of the people are calling them pork or pet projects, but some of the smaller items that are getting tiny grants and little budget allocations all over the state. And I also think of things like the extent to which the legislature has leaned into corporate incentives.
How are Republicans taking Whitmer's sort of quote unquote victory lap?
I mean, obviously, a lot of the policies that the Democrats were able to enact weren't ones that Republicans supported. I think specifically from the business side, I think that, you know, things like repealing right to work really are going to stick in the craw of Republicans for until it's changed, I suppose. But, you know, there were other issues that Republicans and Democrats sort of came together on. The Elliott Larson SASA package expansion saw some bipartisan support. Also, the tax package well, there were some complications, but Republicans did sort of support the earned income tax credit conceptually when that was introduced. So, you know, there are definitely some differences in the details, though. And obviously, I think Republicans, many of whom thought they'd be operating with a legislative majority, would definitely act differently if they were in charge. And I'm curious how much of the fall agenda they'll seek to block.
Emily Lawler, state politics and government editor for the Detroit Free Press. Emily, always a pleasure to have you and your insight and wisdom here on Mishmash.
Hey, thanks for having me. Great mashup.
Mishmash is produced by WDET, Detroit's NPR station. This episode was produced by myself, Shayna Roth, and Hearns Laguerre Jr. Our news director is Jerome Vaughn, and our podcast manager is David Lyons. Our digital team is Dave Kim and Sophia Joswiak, with additional help from Jack Philbrandt. As always, if you listen to this show and want to support it, you can do so by leaving us a review wherever you get your podcasts. Or if you really, really like this show, you can support WDET. Just go to WDET.org/give. Without your support, really, shows like this one and all of the great work that WDET does just would not be possible. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.